It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Don Garber, hope you're listening right now. If it bleeds, it leads. If it's pink, it leads. And if it's messy, you're damn right it leads.
Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue colored glasses. This show, we'll be talking a U.S. women's national team rebound, Florida pink, snow game, referee drama, skiing, Dune, MLS rebrand, the U.S. men's national team AI version, American playing time, and so much more. But first, joining me as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Monday, March 4th in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. We have a blockbuster show today.
We have all sorts of stuff. And even though you might not believe it, we actually get together and talk about the show before we do it. There was all sorts of stuff that we're trying to cram in there, but we will endeavor to get all of it in because there was all sorts of stuff that happened. How was your weekend, my friend? Did you watch anything, do anything of interest?
I did. I teased this on our last podcast. I did go see Dune 2 this weekend, which I thought was absolutely terrific.
So two thumbs up. Great. Better than the, I guess, the last one of this series, of this modern era.
Even better than the last one, which I liked as well. And Sean Sullivan concurs. We were texting about it. He saw it as well, and he's fired up about it.
Yeah. Okay. I will go. And you saw it in the theater, right?
Correct.
Theater experience. Producer Sean was telling us that he was in one of those theaters that maybe the IMAX or whatever, where your seat shakes and you experience it as well as visually.
I saw it that way as
you
well.
You did. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So two thumbs up over there. I'll see it. I don't know if I'll go to the, yeah, maybe. We'll see. I don't have anything necessarily to talk about when it comes to what I watched. But as I mentioned last show, I went skiing this weekend. I was in Beaver Creek, Colorado. And for those that have listened and watched this show over the years, you will know that last year I attended this incredible event, the American Airlines Celebrity Ski Weekend, which is just an incredible weekend, incredible event that raises money for cystic fibrosis. Last year was my first time skiing ever, and they take you down the mountain and you're skiing. There's a race. There's all these kind of things. So this is my second time skiing. So I ski once a year, and it is at the American Airlines Celebrity Ski Weekend to raise money for cystic fibrosis. And keep in mind that when it comes to cystic fibrosis, way back in the 80s, the life expectancy was in the teens. And now here we are in 2024, and a lot of these folks with cystic fibrosis live into their 50s. So the end is in sight, but they keep raising money. And unlike a lot of other diseases out there, unfortunately, you can see how quickly success has been achieved, but they still got a long way to go. And wonderful people, including Rob Stone was there, Carly Lloyd, our Fox family when it comes to Urban Meyer, Mark Ingram II, He was there skiing for the first time ever. Not only was he incredible, low center of gravity, big muscles when it comes to the running game that he has, but he also went down the actual course, finished it, didn't fall, got his time recorded. So the star of the weekend was, without a doubt, Mark Ingram, our colleague over there when it comes to college football. So fun weekend. I'm getting better at skiing, but I certainly would not claim to be a skier, especially since I just do this kind of once a year. But it was fun. All right, should we light this candle, my friend?
Let's do it.
Where should we start?
We begin with the U.S. women's national team. They are back on track. They picked up a comprehensive 3-0 quarterfinal win over Colombia at the Gold Cup. Lindsey Horan from the penalty spot, Nai Swanger, and Jaden Shaw with the goals. The U.S. setting up a semifinal date with Canada on Wednesday.
This was obviously a much more comprehensive type of performance. The result stands for itself. They kicked the crap out of Colombia. And this was a Colombia team that, if you remember them from the World Cup, had gone to the quarterfinals, if I remember correctly. And this is a team that has fight and bite, almost too much so when I'm looking at Colombia, and notwithstanding, a great talent like Linda Caicedo, But it's almost as if the Colombian women's national team would rather fight than actually win the game. And if they spent as much energy and resources into actually playing the game as they do to wanting to kick people and to fight people, they might do a whole lot better. The U.S. was the better team on the day, and it was wonderful to see them rebound from that historic loss to Mexico, which was, they got played off the park when it comes to Mexico. So a couple of things. I think that we are seeing the emergence of a star, not just for the future, but right now when it comes to, as you mentioned, Jenna Nyswanger over there on the left-hand side, wonderful left foot, a true left back. And Crystal Dunn is going to go off and be a legend, but I think that time has come to transition to Nyswanger, and I think that she's going to be a force to be reckoned with going forward when it comes to that that left-hand side. This was a team with, I know we say this a lot, but this was a team that with bite, with desire, and this is a team that I think a lot of people out there that are still looking sideways at this U.S. women's national team over the last couple of years, and certainly over the since the World Cup, this is a team that you can root for. This is a team that is exciting, and this is a team that ultimately gets the result, but does it in a way that draws you in.
When you mentioned the rising star, I thought you were going Jaden Shaw, because she has also been a breakout star in this tournament. And you look at the U.S.'s options up front. Also on Sunday, Katerina Macario scored in her first game back after an almost two-year injury layoff. She scored for Chelsea, who are managed by Emma Hayes, ironically enough. Mm-hmm. If Macario is as good as she was before the injury, Mallory Swanson comes back from her injury. Well, you've got Sophia Smith, Trinity Rodman, and now Jaden Shaw. The options up front are ridiculous.
And they started Alex up top. And I think when Macario comes back and the, you know, this force that's coming back into the national team program, there are going to be a lot of different options. But Alex played well in this game. But I don't think that she is going to be the go-to when it comes to a number nine. I don't know if she's ultimately going to be on the Olympic team. Keep in mind, there's only 18 players that are allowed on the Olympic team. So that's kind of where this group right now, with the additions that are going to come back, are fighting for one of those very, very selective type of spaces when it comes to the Olympic team. But it was a good result, and they move on. I don't know if it necessarily makes that Mexico game a complete anomaly. I think there were some warning signs out there. But again, I go back to, and you mentioned Jaden Shaw and Nyswanger. It's not just play the kids, but it's move on. And in doing so, I think you're going to foster this new generation. You're going to bring a lot more people in that are excited about a new generation doing something different. And I think you're still going to get the results. And this was evident here today.
They might get a shot at revenge versus Mexico, because the other semifinal is Mexico versus Brazil. Mexico beat Paraguay in a 3-2 thriller in the quarterfinals. Brazil hammered Argentina 5-1. At least we can beat them on the women's side still.
Not so fast. I mean, you know, they still got to get there, right?
No. I'm saying Brazil beating Argentina on the women's side. That was a little quip about Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
And our inability to beat Argentina on the men's side. And so the other semifinal will be Mexico-Brazil, also on Wednesday, also in San Diego. So do you want Brazil in the final, or you want another shot at Mexico?
Not so fast, you got to get past Canada.
That's correct.
Right, yeah. Okay. Do I want Brazil, or I want Mexico in the final? I want it for the ability to show that hopefully that Mexico game that they lost was an aberration. But I also want it because it's U.S.-Mexico. And even though this is, you know, the women's side of the game, there is still a rivalry, and certainly that game the other day fueled the fire. So yeah, I don't want Brazil. I want Mexico.
Canada beat Costa Rica in extra time in their quarterfinal. Costa Rica, a team that advanced thanks to a coin flip. Did you follow this after the group stage?
I couldn't follow it. I tried to follow it. So can you explain it? Because you're the savant over there.
Yeah, at the conclusion of the group stage, Costa Rica and Puerto Rico finished tied on everything. They obviously were in different groups, so they didn't play each other head-to-head, but they finished tied on goal difference, goals scored, and points, and all the rest. And so, yeah, according to the rules, it came down to a drawing of lots. And all the years I've been covering tournaments at Fox, I always check the regulations beforehand. I always see way down there drawing of lots, and part of me always roots for it to come down to that, just so we could experience that here at Fox, and we haven't been able to, but it did happen at this Gold Cup.
Can you imagine how badly, I never experienced it, but how badly it must suck to not go on if you're the team that actually loses because of literally a coin toss? Oh my goodness. All right, so anyway, happy days are here again when it comes to the U.S. Women's National Team. Moving on in terms of the tournament here, and this is the type of team, this is the type of performance, this is the type of result that we expect and want. And unfortunately, over the last few years, this is the type of performance that we have not been given. But if this is a harbinger of things to come, wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So onward and upward for the U.S. women.
So just to recap, they've played 4 games in this tournament. They won the 3 you did not attend. They lost the 1 you did attend.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I will stay away from the semifinal and final.
Yes.
All right. Should we move on to MLS?
Yes. Okay. The second weekend of the season. Lots of storylines. We picked out some of the more notable games. Inter Miami with a 5-0 demolition of Orlando. Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi each with 2 goals.
Florida is pink, my friend. As good as Inter Miami were, Orlando was as bad. So opposite ends of the spectrum. However, I think that this was a real message that Inter Miami sent to their own fans, but also to others out there and a lot of people who are not quite and still might not be yet convinced as to how good this Inter Miami team is. I don't think that I can give them elite status yet in the league, but this is pretty impressive through, albeit only 3 games here. Luis Suarez scoring 2. That's a big deal because I think myself and many others looked at him and looked at him as a potential liability. Now, he still may become a liability. And his first goal that he scored was this stumbling, bumbling, typical Luis Suarez type of goal. Took it well, ultimately, but how the ball ultimately got to his foot, and you take your chances, and, you know, the soccer gods can smile upon you, and he did finish it well. This is good for him. This is good for Inter Miami, and let's be honest, this is good for MLS.
I thought both were sensational center forward goals.
Stop sensational. Come on. The tackle was made where 99.9% of the time he gets stripped of the ball. By the way, trying to beat somebody one-on-one, and then the ball just kind of falls into his pathway. And he finished it. He finished it great. So I did not think that goal was just the most amazing thing that you're talking about.
He then scored another that was chalked off because of a marginal offsides. He was involved in other goals, got an assist. So I thought it was a pretty great performance for him. You know, it's interesting. On Saturday morning, Tim Vickery, who's an English journalist who covers South American football and is based in Brazil, he wrote a column about Suarez bringing up the exact same issue that I brought up on our last podcast. It's almost like he listens to us. He mentioned that in Brazil, people are dismissive of MLS. And if Suarez were to perform much worse in MLS than he did in Brazil, how would Brazilians reconcile that? And he said through 2 games, it's early, but he hasn't looked great. And then he goes out and drops that performance. So we'll see what he does moving forward. But that is an interesting subplot to Luis Suarez this season.
And look, while we led with the U.S. women's national team from an MLS perspective, we're leading with Messi and Inter Miami. I don't know if that's lazy, Mossy, but it's how we're rolling. And by the way, the post game on Apple, which I watch, the first 15 minutes, because I looked at it, were devoted entirely to Inter Miami and to Messi. All right, Don Garber, I hope you're listening right now. If it bleeds, it leads. If it's pink, it leads. And if it's Messi, you're damn right it leads.
It is interesting, though. There is some schadenfreude going on. Some people are put off by this whole Inter-Miami thing. They don't want to believe it's going to be this easy. And so they put a lot of stock in the preseason results and also that performance against the Galaxy last weekend. But this was a bad day for those people because they looked every bit the juggernaut that they're purported to be.
Oh, so this is, you're considering them elite?
I am.
Okay, cool. I mean, look, again, this is fun to watch. And this creates incredible amount of content and attraction when Messi is doing well, when Inter is doing well. They are going to have their ups and downs going forward. And whether it's the team or whether it's your friend Luis Suarez, he's going to too. I'm not wishing it because I like goal scorers and I like him and I like big, bold personalities. And he is without a doubt one of them in the game.
They did make an interesting move. They've traded DeAndre Yedlin to Cincinnati. Yedlin joining Miles Robinson there. Some people wondering if that's opening the door for yet another former Barcelona or its current Barcelona player, but yeah. Sergi Roberto could potentially be arriving to fill that right back slot. But that was a notable move by Inter Miami.
Yep. Another American out. We're going to talk about actually the phenomenon of Americans playing in Major League Soccer later on in the pod here, but they don't yet have someone to replace him there. So on the surface and initially, this looks like a win, yet another win when it comes to Cincinnati, unless they replace him with somebody of better stature and better ability going forward, which they certainly possibly could. But right now, there is kind of a hole over there. But you don't do something unless you have something planned.
Also this weekend, Real Salt Lake with a 3-0 home win over LAFC. Gomez got two. Arango got the other against his former club. This match was played in blizzard-like conditions, much to the chagrin of Steve Cherundolo, who said afterwards, "It was an absolute joke we had to play today. The game could have and should have been called off. It was an absolute disgrace to play. I don't understand why on earth we'd count a game like that."
Okay. Whether it's Steve Cherundolo or anybody else in this position, he or she has to protect, as a coach, he or she has to protect the players and has to make it look like this was an anomaly. This is a throwaway type of performance and game and result relative to the to the weather. I thought that this snow game in Salt Lake was awesome. I thought it was unique. And I thought ultimately it was pretty interesting. And it was interesting to see these players in this environment, this adverse environment. And I've said this before, sports, in this case, we're talking about soccer, but sports in general, like life, isn't always perfect. It isn't always easy. It isn't always ideal. And the ability that players in all sports, the ability that they have to adjust and to adapt is a skill. And it's something to be valued, just like trapping the ball or passing the ball or shooting the ball. And in that Utah snow the other day, Real Salt Lake had that skill and LAFC didn't. Am I saying that this is an experience or a circumstance that you are going to confront on a week in and week out basis? No, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination. But in this moment, you have to, like I said, adjust in the way that you actually play the game. And so I can value and I can praise Pablo Mastroianni and company over there and RSL, who saw this situation, recognized a potential opportunity because they have the talent and skill to adjust as opposed to their competition out there. But, you know, and, you know, I was over the years, Musa, you know, I've talked about the roofing of stadiums and the potential for that to change not just the business, but also change the competition and kind of create a consistency, create an ideal. The problem is that it costs a lot of money to put roofs on stadiums. And so you're not going to be able to do that going forward. And so there's a lot of people that look at this as a romantic notion of, hey, this is an outlier, but it's something wonderful that's going to be celebrated. And when you talk about games this year in Major League Soccer in 2024, this is going to be pointed to because it is so unique, because it is so different. And again, I don't want it to be the norm, but every once in a while, you know, you have these situations, especially relative to weather. And you could make the same argument that Steve Cherundolo is making when it comes to a game that's played in the rain or a game where it's blistering hot. And there's plenty of those that happen in the summer. And it does change the quality. It does change the ability to have a situation and a field in this case that is conducive, if you will, to what normally happens. But, you know, I get why Steve Cherundolo is saying that, but I completely disagree.
Yeah, there's two issues that prompt postponements in situations like this. Health and safety of not only the players, but also the fans in the stands. And also we've seen when it rains enough and the field gets flooded, if the ball isn't moving and sure, it's getting stuck in puddles and it reduces the game to such a farce that sometimes they postpone it. You didn't have an issue with either one of those counts here. You thought there was still like a viable game to be played even in those.
So first off, go back to the health and safety. Right. If people are getting frostbitten in the stadium because it's so cold. First off, you can anticipate cold. Okay? So if you're in the stadium, I'm assuming that you are preparing for a potential cold situation. I don't want anybody to experience hypothermia or get frostbitten, whether you're on the field or off the field. But when people talk about safety, I'm assuming that's what they're talking about. I mean, what else are they talking about? Players sliding that normally wouldn't happen when you're sliding? Because that certainly can happen. You know, you talk about, oh, by the way, the artificial surfaces that teams play on. Steve Cherundolo, you could insert artificial surface and say, well, this isn't the game because the ball bounces differently. So there's a million different things that you can argue against. But I didn't have a problem with this game. And evidently, Steve Cherundolo and Pablo Mastroianni met before the game with the referees and they determined, yes, we're going to play this game. And then as the game progressed and the snow started coming down, yes, the circumstance changes, but you're already in it. So as far as RSL was concerned, we're in it to win it.
We do sometimes see in these like Green Bay Packers games when it's freezing cold, you do have these nut jobs in the stands without their shirt or drank enough beer. So fans don't always come prepared for the cold.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people, again, that looked at it from a romantic notion as, hey, this was awesome. This was something to be remembered, not just in terms of the result, but there we talk about the Snow Classico years back, and even the game that we had in Minnesota just a few years back when it comes to the national team. So this has happened before. So I'm sorry, Steve Cherundolo and LAFC. Suck it up, Buttercup. Figure it out.
I could see Sean Sullivan being that kind of guy that would go to a game in freezing temperature and not wear a shirt and drink enough beers to be able to kind of jump
Absolutely.
Around.
Absolutely. Producer Sean would be there without his shirt screaming and yelling.
The other LA team fared well this weekend. The Galaxy with a 3-1 away win over San Jose. Paintsil with a goal and an assist to Jovalich. Ricky Pooge on the score sheet as well. The Galaxy have a little something going on right now.
They do. And so the question after the game, and rightfully so, is, are the Galaxy back? Because we've been talking about, you would be amazed, Mossy. I talked to a bunch of people over the weekend that are based in Los Angeles, and they were talking about the LAFC and LA Galaxy dynamic. And I've said this before, but what's been most disappointing from a Galaxy perspective, and I obviously have a history and a past with the Galaxy, what's been most disappointing to me is that while I thought when LAFC came into market, they were going to light a fire under the Galaxy's ass to not just compete, but say, no, this nouveau riche coming into our market is not going to pass, and we are going to up our game. And they didn't. They went the opposite way. And doing so, by the way, they lost market, they lost business, and a lot of people with the new stadium and the successful team. So the question is this version in 2024, once again, under Greg Vanney, who has been given a very long leash, is this the return to greatness that I think a lot of people, well, not everybody wants, but certainly people are expecting given the LA Galaxy's history? They're back in that this is a very, very small sample size, and it's been very, very good. And so I think you can be cautiously optimistic that this is going to be a better season for the Los Angeles Galaxy. You mentioned Paintsil, who I think is the real deal and gives that width, but in a much more effective and ruthless way than, who was the guy before? Cabral? That side of the field, and he's a lot more lethal. And so far, so good. But the Galaxy has been built on being great, winning trophies, being champions, being titles, being elite, and doing it with a bravado and a swagger. That's going to take a little longer to get back to.
Portland, DC United finished 2-2. Portland jumped out to a 2 lead thanks to goals by Asprey and Moreno, but then Click from the penalty spot made it 2-1, and Fletcher, the teenager, made it 2-2.
This was such an interesting game because we talked before about how both of these teams, Portland and DC, had it easy in the first week. And this would be a much better type of competition. And look, you're flying across country. Benteke evidently scratched right before the game. So they did this without Benteke, who we know had the hat trick in the first game. So hats off to DC for coming back. And Portland, out of the gates, it was great. Everybody's screaming and yelling. They're cutting the logs up. They're doing all that kind of stuff. And then they took the foot off the gas and they let this DC team back in. So I don't know if I thought I was going to get a better idea of what these teams are. And yet I'm still left scratching my head as to how good or not bad, but how mediocre they may be going forward. But if you're Portland and you're up 2-0 at home in that type of environment, and now you let DC come back in, you got to be kicking yourself right now. So that's a loss for Portland as far as I'm concerned, and a huge win for DC going across country, getting a point in that fashion.
SKC Philadelphia 1-1. Voltaire scored for SKC in the first half. Bedoya equalized late in second half stoppage time. Too late for Peter Vermes. He felt like the game should have been over by then. And also, in the buildup to that goal, there was a throw-in that should have gone SKC's way. It went Philadelphia's way. So this was the replacement refs controversy of this weekend.
Yes. To be fair, I didn't think there was a lot of controversy other than manufactured controversy. And that's a whole other subject, because I think there's a lot of people actually out there that are not secretly, I think even publicly, wanting the refs to mess up because, you know, they have ulterior motives and interests out there. I don't think anybody should want the referees to mess up. I don't think that they had a bad weekend, but it's a mistake. But when it comes to mistake, you don't have to be a replacement referee to make a mistake, as was evidenced multiple places around the world this weekend. In this situation, as applies to the other things that I know you want to mention here, if you are Sporting KC and Peter Vermes out there, you can go back and you can complain and blame the throw-in. You can go back and you can complain when it comes to time. But the reality is you didn't close up shop and you didn't do the job. And you, by the way, you didn't do it at home. And because you didn't, you lost out on 2 points there. It's not because of the referee. It's because you weren't mentally and physically tuned in and turned on in the most important moments of the game. A mistake is going to happen whether you have Colina refereeing the game or whether you have a 10-year-old who's in his or her first refereeing capacity refereeing a game. Mistakes are going to happen from referees. In this case, right there, it's easy for Peter Vermes to blame the mistake. Just defend better and finish out the game.
Yeah, we're going to revisit refereeing in the next segment when we talk Forest, Liverpool, and Valencia, Real Madrid. I'll save my stoppage time rant for Valencia, Real Madrid. But as far as MLS, I know this caught your attention, this Athletic piece about how MLS broadcasters are approaching the replacement refs.
Yeah, so the good folks over there at the Athletic, and they're wonderful over there, and they get a lot of scoops over there. So they reported, let me make sure, this was Jeff Reuter over there, that MLS had advised the talent, which is what you call people on television, that are broadcasting the game, in a memo that was sent around. They advised all of these men and women that broadcast the game on the weekend that, quote, fans tune in to watch and listen to the game, the memo read in part. Quote, they aren't focused on the officials. Therefore, we don't believe it is necessary to belabor the point during the match. It is best to mention the situation in the pregame and move on. End of quote. Now, what this memo referred to was the ongoing back and forth and negotiation and the lockout of the referees when it comes to Major League Soccer, which is why we have talked about replacement referees over the last couple of weeks. Now, a lot of people looked at this and screamed and yelled about it. I didn't think this was that big a deal when it comes to Major League Soccer, in that it's your business and you want to put your best foot forward. And this type of memo or directive, I think that you could apply this, and this would happen in numerous situations when you have a company, an entity out there that is trying to put its best foot forward in this situation. And so I don't think that this is beyond the pale. I don't think that this is problematic. MLS is going to do what they need to do to put out the best product when it comes to their game. So I didn't think that was such a big deal. But I wanted to mention it out there because it is an ongoing challenge and it could turn into an ongoing problem, because the more this goes on, the more opportunity there is for mistakes to be made and for those mistakes to be equated with the replacement referees. Whether it's true or not, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, whether it's true or not, they are going to be blamed. The replacement referees are going to be blamed for mistakes. It's if those mistakes would happen no matter what that it gets lost in this conversation right now. But from a referee perspective, and the ones that are being locked out right now, they maybe even benefit from the longer this goes on, because there's, I mean, just by the amount of games, there are going to be mistakes. And they, in terms of the replacement referees, are going to get blamed.
And there is this general trend in sports media. I've read multiple think pieces about this. The relationship between networks and sports leagues is becoming one of partners who are promoting a product. I know ESPN's been criticized at times for the way they treat the NBA. We've been criticized at times for the way we treat some of our properties. I know the World Soccer Talks of the world are always ready to pounce on stuff like that. But I just think it's the general trend of the way sports media is going.
Well, first off, the people that pounce, especially those that work for big corporations or big entities out there, big companies out there, they're being hypocritical, because there are directives that come all the time from the top and from the leadership in terms of messaging, in terms of what you want to do, and in terms of what you can do and what you can't do. So screaming and yelling about it, unless you're, you know, I guess a complete body unto yourself and you answer to no one out there. We all have bosses, and we all, like I said, have directives out there. And I don't think that that's necessarily a problem. I think we all understand it, and we put it into our assessment of what we are watching. And so when you're watching an Apple production and you're watching MLS out there, the understanding coming from the Athletic here that these men and women have been told, hey, listen, don't dwell on it. does that change your experience? Is that a problem that they're not bringing it up every 2 minutes? No, it's not a problem. You know it. If you want to talk about it, go ahead and talk about it. If you want to scream and yell about it, go ahead and scream and yell about it. If you don't want to partake in this when it comes to the product that's being put out there because of this specific reason, then don't partake in it.
Very quickly, Liga MX this past weekend, Club America with a 5-1 win over Atlas Zendejas with 2 goals there. Chivas got drilled 3-0 away to Cruz Azul. Cade Cow started, was replaced by Chicharito in the second half. And then Monterrey with a 3-0 home win over Pumas. Brandon Vasquez with a beautiful goal, his 6th in all competitions.
Wow, how great has it gone for Brandon Vasquez over there in terms of just what he's doing, obviously from American perspective and the stock. And it is kind of nice, too. We were talking earlier about, you know, this dynamic of leagues and how protective we are and how sensitive we are. And when Luis Suarez comes over here and what it says or what it doesn't say about that league. And now you have Brandon Vasquez going over there and scoring consistently and just eating it up. And, you know, while a couple of years ago he was phenomenal, wasn't great last year and wasn't scoring at will right there. So, Mossy, what does this say about MLS versus Liga MX?
MLS is at least as good and arguably better.
All right. Anything else, my friend?
Yeah, we talked about MLS. We talked about Liga MX. So naturally, next we go to the CONCACAF Champions Cup. The round of 16 gets underway this week. We have 3 MLS versus Liga MX matchups: Philadelphia Pachuca, Orlando City Tigres, and Cincinnati Monterrey. Brandon Vasquez facing his former team. We also have 2 all MLS matchups: Nashville Inter Miami, Houston versus Columbus, and a tasty all Mexican affair: Chivas America, Cal versus Endejas, the Super Clásico. So yeah, this competition is really going to start to percolate here.
Yeah, I don't even know where to... I mean, look, the Chivas America thing, that's awesome. I'm really interested in the Nashville-Miami, given what we've talked about, what Miami is, and Mossy's very quick pronouncement that they are the elite and the cream of the crop when it comes to Major League Soccer.
Of all the trophies they're going for this season, to me, this is the likeliest one because it's only... 8 games, mm-hmm. and it's early in the season. They haven't put a lot of miles on those legs. So if they prioritize this, I think they're the favorites to win it.
And again, if you win it, I get so confused sometimes. But if you win it there...
You go to that expanded Club World Cup next year.
Wonderful. All right, so all sorts of stuff midweek when it comes to MLS and Liga MX.
And programming note, the following Tuesday, we have a triple header on FS1. Round of 16 second legs. We're going to do Pachuca, Philadelphia, Columbus, Houston, Antigua's Orlando City. I know you're involved with John Strong, Stu Holden, Keith Costigan, Kobe Jones, Moe Du, Johnny Arai, and Brad Weimer producing, Zach Kenworthy coordinating. I'll be there. It's going to be kind of a getting the band back together night at Fox.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been too long. It's been feast or famine with us. And so I'm ready to feast, my friend. So that'll be fun Tuesday. All right. Anything else?
That is it.
All right. Let's take another quick break. Let's take our first quick break. And when we come back, we head abroad to recap a huge, huge weekend for U.S. men's national team players over there in Europe and other sports. See ya. Okay, welcome back. Let's head around and check out some games over there in Europe, and especially the ones that involved some U.S. men's national team players. Should we start over there in Italy?
Yes. On Friday, AC Milan claimed a 1-0 away win over Lazio. Okafor with a late goal. Crazy game in which Lazio had 3 players sent off, and Christian Pulisic was directly involved in 2 of those red cards. In the 50th minute, Pellegrini committed a foul on him and picked up a yellow. Then 7 minutes later, Tati Castellanos is down on the ground, and so Pellegrini, who had the ball, wanted to play it out of bounds. Pulisic didn't realize that. He stole the ball from him and dribbled towards the goal. Pellegrini reached out and grabbed him and got himself a 2nd yellow and a red card. Lazio were absolutely livid. And then in stoppage time, Guendouzi had the ball. Pulisic grabbed him, committed a foul, and Guendouzi shoved Pulisic off of him and onto the ground. But the referee then gave Guendouzi a 2nd yellow and a red card. The incident with Pellegrini was the real talking point here. In the post-game press conference, Stefano Pioli passionately defended Pulisic against charges that it was unsportsman behavior. He received death threats on social media afterwards. His teammates are rallying around them. So crazy stuff.
I mean, where do you even start with this game? Oh, so first off, as an actual result, this is a great result for Milan going to Rome and beating Lazio. So congratulations to Christian Pulisic. That Christian Pulisic was, you know, such a protagonist in this and such a pest in this. is wonderful. Now, specifically on the play, and this is a bigger discussion here, it drives me nuts. I love Christian Pulisic for a number of different reasons, but this particular play made me love him even more. Because in this instance, what you saw was what players and what teams and what soccer should be, in that you play to the whistle. Too often, there are players that take it upon themselves to decide when the game should start or finish. And then they hide behind this injury, or what they perceive as an injury, and above the game, and this is in the spirit of the game, and this is being a true professional, and all of that. I looked at this, and I have absolutely no sympathy for Lazio. Absolutely none. Christian Pulisic did what any player, not any player, but what players should do. And in that moment, you can look around and say, oh, no, we've stopped playing. We're not doing that. No, you just keep playing. Because in this game, as you know, Masi, if I had a nickel for every single time somebody came up and told me, well, why are they rolling around? Why are they faking it? I don't have an answer to that. And so in this day and age, where I think it's even become at times worse, I love that Christian Pulisic, and in this case, Milan, said, no, we're just going to play. And if the referee blows the whistle to stop the game, that is because that referee is in the position to do so and has been given not just the result, not just the right, but the responsibility to blow it. And if they don't do it, game on, my friend. And that's what Christian Pulisic said, and I love him for it.
I agree 100%. If a player is down on the ground injured, it should be at the referee's discretion whether you stop the game or not. And if he doesn't blow the whistle, you keep playing. It shouldn't be incumbent on the players on the field to decide whether the injury is serious enough to kick the ball out of bounds, and then you have to give it back to them. And then the game situation matters. You know, a team is more apt to be sportsmen if they're winning and it's earlier in the game versus if they're losing late. So you get into all that nonsense. And so just leave it up to the referee.
Exactly. There are no saints in this game, Mossy. There are only sinners. And oftentimes we see the sinner hiding behind that saint when it comes to the stoppage of the game and the the belief that the players should be able to decide that. The kicking the ball out of bounds and all that, it just drove me crazy. The referee is there to make that decision and determination, like you said. So let them do that and just keep playing. Oh.
Also this weekend, Napoli claimed a 2-1 home win over Juventus. Kvaratskhelia scored in the first half, then Chiesa equalized late, but Raspadori scored the winner even later. Weston McKennie did not play because of that shoulder injury. Timmy Weah came on as a sub.
Do we have a timeline yet on Weston McKennie? Because we talked about his shoulder situation here. I don't think it's going to be long term, but it's now when I see Juventus play and play without Weston McKennie, it's not the same. And from a results perspective, it's obvious you need Weston on the field in order to win.
You wonder why Sean Sullivan is winning awards. He got in my ear right away, gave me the Weston News, Gazzetta dello Sport reporting. They hope he's back for the next game.
There we go. So, listen, Juventus needs Weston McKennie. That he's American is just, a part of the story. All right, what else?
We go to the Eredivisie next. PSV Feyenoord finished 2-2. Dest and Tillman started. Pepe was an unused sub. Tillman scored a sensational goal. Santi Jimenez on the score sheet for Feyenoord.
All right, so Alec Tillman, sensational?
A nutmeg, and then finish.
Is it as good as Luis Suarez's first goal?
I will say on Malik Tillman, he's on loan from Bayern Munich. You wonder if he's played well enough this season at PSV for Bayern to give him another shot there.
Now, do you think that this is a bad result for PSV?
No, this keeps them 10 points in front, and they remain unbeaten. Remember, they're vying for an invincible season.
Okay. All right. We got invincibles in that they haven't lost.
Correct.
Okay, got it. Should we go over to the to England?
Yes, we go to the Championship first. Norwich with a 1-0 win over Sunderland. Josh Sargent with another goal. He's now up to 11 goals in 15 Championship matches this season.
Yeah, so now you got Josh Sargent, who's killing it right now and wonderful and scoring goals. We mentioned earlier with Brandon Vasquez doing what he's doing. Pepe coming in and out and getting his goals and playing. Who's missing out there? Oh, what's Balogun? Balogun, you better keep up, my friend.
I will mention him in a minute.
Okay.
I'm starting to see the first Sargent transfer rumors. I read Brentford this weekend.
Mm.
Ivan Toney probably going to leave this summer. They've already signed this Brazilian Igor Thiago from Club Bruges. Paid a lot of money for him, but evidently they're also interested in Sargent.
Well, there's nothing more valuable than goals in the game, and there's nothing more valuable than the people that score goals. And whether you're a big old redheaded American or anybody else, people will come calling when you do it on a consistent basis, which is what our friend Josh Sargent is doing.
We stay in England, but move up a level to the Premier League. Nottingham Forest suffered a 1-0 home defeat to Liverpool. Gio Reyna did not play because of a minor injury, and obviously neither did Matt Turner, who was on the bench. The Liverpool goal deep in stoppage time, Darwin Nunez, and there was some controversy in the lead-up to it because Konate picked up a head injury while Forrest had the ball. The game was stopped, and then when it restarted, they gave the ball to Liverpool. So our colleague Mark Clattenburg, who evidently works for Forrest as a refereeing analyst, I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's a brave new day for referees. Well yeah. Done for being able to carve that, I guess, new job out that exists out there.
Yeah, he's talking about Forrest launching some sort of protest. We know that never leads to anything. But nevertheless, we talked in the opening segment about replacement referees catching a lot of grief. You're wondering why the actual referees don't face the same criticism.
In quote unquote, the best league in the world. How is it possible that an error was made like this? How is it possible that these referees at the highest level that have all of this experience are able to go on the field and make such an error? How is it possible? They're not even replacement referees. Oh my goodness. I will say this, back to the Mark Clattenburg thing. If this job is something that takes hold and other teams are doing this, it's basically you're just doing it to have somebody advocating for you out there publicly to maybe judge the situation, to maybe get a point here or a call here along the way. And who knows, maybe to these teams, they got a lot of money. Maybe it's worth them to have something like that. But again, in this situation, a mistake was made. And ultimately, you can go back, which is certainly what not only the players, but the owner of Nottingham Forest did. You can go back and blame the mistake over there. But there's still a lot that has to happen before that ball goes in the net, whether it's for Nottingham Forest or whether it is for Sporting KC over there. There's a lot of stuff that can be done to snuff out the fire and to recognize and smell the potential for problems along the way that wasn't done. And we can just keep rolling it back until you find a situation where you feel aggrieved and say, well, that's the reason why the ball went in the net. That's the reason why we tied the game. That's the reason why we lost the game.
On Sunday, Manchester City claimed a 3-1 win over Manchester United in the derby. United actually took the lead in the first half. Rashford with a sensational strike. Then in the second half, Foden equalized with an equally sensational strike. Then Foden again made it 2-1. Haaland in stoppage time sealed it. 3-1 the final for the citizens.
So I think a couple of things come out of this game. One, and not that he's just bursting on the scene or anything, but Phil Foden and what he has, I guess, become and matured into, and especially in light of all the other stars that have been bandied about when it comes to Man City and others out there, this was kind of his game. I saw a lot of people talking online and social media out there about how important he has become and how great he's become. And look, he's doing it on a field with Erling Haaland and De Bruyne's and these types of the players out there. So I think this was his game. You can't say it's a coming out type of game because he's been there all along, but he grabbed a hold of this game with both hands and showed why he is one of the great players in the world. I think the other side of that story is just how poorly Manchester United played. Notwithstanding the wonderful goal from Rashford, and that's a whole other conversation of what Rashford is and what he isn't, but in the same way that I talked about finally seeing a better version of the U.S. Women's National Team that came out this weekend, you're waiting for that better version of Manchester United to come along, and it is yet to materialize, and it was graphically illustrated how it is yet to materialize in this game.
You know, we have the Euros this summer. I keep thinking about that England team with Harry Kane doing what he's doing at Bayern, Jude Bellingham doing what he's doing at Real Madrid, Saka and Foden having the seasons they're having, Declan Rice at Arsenal, and even Rashford, who hasn't had a great season, still shows you these flashes of how good he is. It is scary.
Yeah, they're stocked. They are stocked. And they'll be one to watch, and they will rightly be the favorites, whether it comes to the Euros, and if they continue on and this continues to progress, then certainly in 2026.
So in the Premier League, Liverpool at 63, City at 62. We're taping this on Monday morning. Arsenal face Sheffield United later today. If they handle their business, they'll be at 61. The Premier League, all things being equal, is already the most entertaining league, and they have by far the best title race this season. Next week, Liverpool hosts Manchester City. Later in the month, City hosts Arsenal, so it's really going to start popping off here in the next few weeks.
Now, we've seen in the past where Man City have gone on streaks and really rattled off a bunch of points. And there's still some really big games to be had here. Do you see missteps? Are they just inevitable? Because these are, you know, three pretty money types of teams when it comes to their results. And will it really just come down to whenever they're playing each other and those types of moments?
Yeah, I don't.
6 points, they call it.
Whatever. I don't see either City or Liverpool dropping too many more points. I think it's going to be an incredible eyeball-to-eyeball race between those two. And I had dismissed Arsenal and their ability to keep up with those two, but I'm even wondering about them, the way they're playing. They might be in there until the end, too. So it's going to be absolutely incredible.
It's fun. It's a fun title race. It's one that I think other leagues would love to have, but oftentimes don't. And to your point, the rich get richer in terms of the eyeballs and the popularity and the entertainment. And there it is. All right, what else?
Next up, UEFA Champions League round of 16, second legs this week. On Tuesday, Bayern Munich play host to Lazio, needing to overturn a 1-0 deficit. I mentioned the Premier League has by far the best title race. It is over in Germany. Bayern stumbled again this past weekend. They drew Freiburg while Leverkusen handled their business against Cologne. It is a 10-point gap with 10 to play. So it is over there. So all Bayern have to play for the rest of the season is trying to win the Champions League. It may not even get past the round of 16.
Is that enough? Because obviously, like you said, they put all their eggs in this UCL basket here. They're down 1-0.
All right.
Playing at home. Who do you got? Bayern, Lazio?
I think Bayern will advance.
Oh, I do too. So I'm there with you. All right. Then next one.
Then also on Tuesday, Real Sociedad hosts PSG. Sociedad looking to overturn a 2-0 deficit. The interesting note on PSG is this past weekend, they were away to Monaco to finish 0-0. Balogun started for Monaco, by the way. Mbappe started, was subbed off at the half, got changed in the dressing room, and watched the second half from the stands with his mother. That situation gets weirder by the day.
Wow, when you run into your mother, then you know things aren't good. Oh, boy. We talked about it last week about this punitive way that they're going about it, but I kind of like the pettiness. All right, so who you got? Sociedad, PSG. PSG leading 2-0, going to Sociedad.
I'll say PSG, but I wouldn't put it past them to screw this up.
Really? They're I'm not even qualified. It's
weird
PSG.
Thumb.
I'm going with PSG.
Then Real Madrid will host Leipzig. Real Madrid with a 1-0 aggregate lead. You would expect them to finish off Leipzig there. But the big story with Real Madrid is what happened this past weekend. They were away to Valencia. They went down 2-0. Then Vinicius scored twice to make it 2-2. And then deep in stoppage time, Real Madrid earned a corner. And the referee evidently indicated that the corner was going to be the last play of the game. But then the corner was only sort of half cleared. And Brahim Diaz put it right back into the box. Bellingham headed it in for what he thought was the winner. But the referee blew the whistle for the end of the game while the ball was in the air. And so Real Madrid were absolutely furious. Bellingham complained so much he got a red card. He's going to be suspended for upcoming games. But again, it's triggered this larger debate about stoppage time. I talked about it with my father this morning. And of all the things that non-soccer fans ask me about with this sport, this is the one I have the hardest time defending. The ambiguity at the end of the game is ridiculous as to when a game is going to end. No other sport has this. The New York Times wrote a column about it today. And the guy suggested, I think it was a pretty good suggestion, that when the referee indicates how much stoppage time is going to be played, from that point forward, you put that amount of time on the scoreboard, and any stoppage after that, the referee indicates that you stop the clock right there. Yeah. And then you start it again when play resumes. And so everybody knows they can see the clock. They can see when the game is going to end. You can do a countdown like every other sport. 3, 2, 1, boom, end of the game. We have to do something. IFAB, instead of worrying about blue cards, which, by the way, it sounds like they're going to scrap. That's a conversation for another day. This is something you need to fix. This ambiguity as to when a game is going to end is leading to so much controversy. And I'm sorry, it's correctable. MLS had the right idea when they first started the league. And then they sort of got peer pressured into conforming with how the rest of the world does it. But remember how the clock used to count down.
Yeah.
And the referee would stop the clock whenever there was any sort of stoppage and then start it again. I'm sorry. This is something that needs to be addressed.
Question for you. were these replacement referees that were being used?
No, they were not.
They were the real referees, the experienced referees, the men and women that have studied and have had all of this game time. And in this moment, oh my goodness. I do think that a proper compromise is to, in that moment, not during the first 90, but in that moment, actually make it stop time so everybody can see it. We've talked about how in MLS stadiums right now, at least, you know, the clock is now visible because that ambiguity they talk about. And let's be honest, the confusion that people have. Now, there is a part of me that kind of likes the fact that it's a unique aspect of soccer. I know it's a frustrating aspect of soccer for you and for many others there, but, you know, the fact that all of that power is in that one person at that time to just kind of arbitrarily say, well, this is the point where I feel that it's been fair in terms of the time that I have. That might be too much power for any one individual. And it might, if it's a whole lot more clarity when it comes to stop time with a clock there. So I would advocate for that. That's smart. And I think that would be something that a lot of people would jump onto. I don't know who would push back on something like that.
And the historical reference everybody is making is in Brazil's opening match against Sweden at the 1978 World Cup, the score was 1-1. Zico headed in a corner at the end of the game, and the referee blew the whistle for the end of the game while the ball was in the air. And that result, that game finishing tied versus Brazil winning, made it where Brazil ended up in the same side of the bracket as Argentina, and it affected the whole rest of the tournament and how it played out. Argentina ended up winning that World Cup. But so, yeah, I saw Gary Lineker reference that on X, and in the New York Times article, they referenced it. That's kind of, everybody who's old enough to remember it, that's kind of where their mind goes when they see an incident like that.
Yeah. I mean, again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about in terms of playing to the whistle. And this is something that coaches and parents and people have talked about for years, playing to the whistle. But you're on the field when, again, you don't know, and it's not just in the stands, the players don't know when it's going to actually happen, and you're screaming and yelling at the referee, saying, blow it, it's done, do it now, and then they might decide that it's going to happen in the middle of a cross, and they might decide. Now, most referees try to find a neutral or benign type of moment to blow it, so there's not that type of blowback, but if and when somebody actually adheres to, albeit their own personal clock that they are keeping, it's hard to blame them. I mean, they are going by the letter of the law, literally the laws in the game, that give them that autonomy to make that decision. So I don't know. I think, to your point, we get the stop clock on the field. You can even sponsor the stop clock, sponsored by whoever it is, and make some money out of it and have a whole lot of clarity on and off the field.
Man City also in action this week in the Champions League. They host Copenhagen. They have a 3-1 aggregate lead, so they will finish off Copenhagen and for sure advance there.
All right, so we're Real Madrid and Man City to go on there.
Yep.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexi. Don't go anywhere. Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. And keep in mind that out there on the social media platforms, our handle is SOTU with Lexi. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi out there on the social media platforms. Or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297. That's 657-549-2297. Mossy, what do the folks want to know this show?
First up, Mike on X asks, is there any possibility of MLS going through a rebrand, whether they buy USL or not?
Oh, my goodness. So I had mentioned, I don't know, a few weeks back about, you know, big type of bold actions. And one of the things that I talked about was MLS buying and acquiring, if you will, in terms of an asset, USL, and becoming all MLS with everything that happens and kind of bringing everything into one tent and one brand. So whether they buy it or not, we have in the past seen MLS rebrand. And when you talk about a rebrand, could be the aesthetic rebrand, and that comes down to your brand, your mark, your logo, whatever you want to talk it. For people that are watching, they can see our old MLS logo, which was of a time, as a lot of brands are. And while some of them become timeless, MLS didn't feel that this was what they needed going forward. And it was, you know, a 90s type of artwork and aesthetic when it comes to Major League Soccer, and they moved on to something better, something that was actually had the ability to be used by in multiple ways and was much more functional going forward. But what didn't change was Major League Soccer. Now, when you're talking about rebrands, the potential to actually rebrand the actual league in terms of what it is called, that could be on the table. I don't see that happening. While we have seen teams, many teams, rebrand in terms of what their team name is, and very few of the originals still exist, for the most part, when it comes to what Major League Soccer is and MLS, it's a known league around the world. And I think it would be problematic to go and change it. Although, who knows, you could, you know, call it football or something like that. Or, you know, an association, which we know is where soccer comes from. So you could do creative things, but I don't think that it would be prudent from a business perspective changing what Major League Soccer is. Whether people like or don't like MLS, they still recognize when you say Major League Soccer, when you say MLS, what it is, and globally, which is very, very important to Major League Soccer. But it does bring up, Mossy, a whole lot of ideas about what MLS and I guess soccer in general looks like going forward. And we've talked about how important 2026. And I guess this is a good time also to mention that the U.S. Open Cup, some news that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks and the back and forth, and MLS is threatening to withdraw all of their teams and their first teams when it comes to the Open Cup. It has been, I guess, settled right now in that the Open Cup going forward here in 2024, at least now for this year and for this version, is going to have 8 full MLS teams. Now, keep in mind the MLS Next squads will participate as well for other teams. But it means that the full teams for a lot of MLS teams are not going to be. Now, there's a lot of people that are talking about this as a capitulation, and this is the United States Soccer Federation saying, whatever you want, MLS. Now, what it sounds like from the outside to me is that nobody got everything that they wanted, and so nobody is completely happy. And a lot of times when you're talking about a deal, that kind of marks a fair deal, given in particular these circumstances. And keep in mind, the United States Soccer Federation, they need Major League Soccer. And MLS is a more powerful entity. MLS leveraged that power to their benefit in this type of situation. And so I guess it really comes down to what kind of responsibility a league, in this case MLS, or could be any other league, has to the federation. And that's where a lot of the discussion is. But this continues to be a work in progress. And this is not done. There will continue to be changes. So you're asking originally about a rebrand. I think the sport is going to look different off the field and look different on the field going forward. That is inevitable. They're throwing stuff at the wall. Mossy, I don't know if you saw this over there in New England, speaking of one of the OGs, speaking of one of the original team names, the New England Revolution. They have tried to get into this tradition that exists now in multiple markets and in multiple stadiums for teams of having a pregame where you bring up a celebrity or a special guest and have them do something. You know, they can smash a hammer on this and that. Well, New England, given where they are and the history and the historic sense, they decided to do this tossing out of a box of tea, obviously in reference to the Boston Tea Party and all that history around there. Well, it didn't quite come off the way I think that they wanted, in that it was very dry and didn't have the panache that others do when they're ringing the bell up in Montreal or they're, you know, the sledgehammer over there in Atlanta and that kind of stuff. And it reminded me of, I don't know if you've been following this crazy Willy Wonka experience that they tried to put on that was just so bare bones and horrible that it actually made incredible headlines around the world. And especially when it comes to New England, and this is a kind of a rebrand or, you know, an addition to the brand when it comes to things that they are doing and trying to establish tradition. Sometimes you want tradition to happen organically and sometimes you got to kind of foster it. And so I don't fault them for trying something, but I think in this moment, it just didn't come off the way that they wanted. Who knows? Maybe they're smarter than all of us and the bad press is better than the no press that normally would accompany something like this. But this is the New England Revolution. They have people that are on the side of this, and they have since I was playing back in 1996 when the league kicked off, musket men, people with muskets on the side, dressed up in historic American garb that shoot muskets. Just give the special guest or the celebrity up there a musket and have him or her shoot that. Now, that's a cool thing. That's something that I will watch. That's something that you can put video and you can have it be viral. And if we're going to do something, let's do that. Or if you're going to, if you're dead set on having the Tea Party thing, then figure out a way to make it better. I think our friend Taylor Twellman suggested a kiddie pool at the very least, so that the tea lands in what is the representation of the Boston Harbor over there. Anyway, thoughts on this? I've rambled on enough.
Yeah, on the revolution, I've talked about how much domestic travel I want to do this year. I've thought about going to Boston and experiencing some of the revolutionary stuff. Paul Revere's house, the Freedom Trail, Boston Tea Party, Boston Massacre, etc. So the concept is cool. I agree with you. The execution wasn't great. And Taylor Twellman, a revolution legend, is criticizing it. So they got to listen to him. Yeah, on the Open Cup, the biggest casualty of this whole situation is Stu Holden has resigned from the Open Cup committee.
Yeah, I know. Hey, listen, it's the best thing that he possibly can do. He gets his life back, and it was not going in the way that he wanted. If you heard him on the show, and you could certainly read between the lines in terms of how that that is going. Some news breaking as we come on air here, right?
Yes, regarding the MLS All-Star Game, we're going to go back to the MLS versus League MX format for this year. I've advocated for East versus West, but to me, this is the next best thing. I do like this MLS versus League MX. We covered a couple of these for Fox. I certainly like it better than bringing over a European club. So to me, this is actually a positive news.
I think this is the best of both worlds because you get a competitor, in this instance, it's League MX, that is still having to put together a team as opposed to oftentimes when you're playing a team. And I know that they are often in preseason when they're playing the MLS All-Stars, but it's hard to just put a group of 11 players or 22 players together and with no training, little to no training, and then go on the field. And the MLS All-Stars have been at a disadvantage because of that, playing against some of these teams that I know that they're in preseason, but they are still teams and there's an idea and a philosophy in the way that they play. So in this case, it kind of evens it out, and it does it with a league and a fan base out there that we know MLS has been trying to court, that we know the partnerships and the history that exists between these two leagues in the past, now, and certainly going on in the future. So I think this is great, and this is something that I will watch.
Next up, we have a voicemail. Let's take a listen right now.
Hey, boys. This is Nick. I'm from Alabama. Getting over being sick, but I've noticed this trend, like with a lot of the teams in MLS, is that we hardly have any Americans on the roster. LAFC is one of the teams that's quite outrageous with this, in my opinion. With only Long, and I forget the right back's name, but I thought MLS was set up to be a development league for the national team, and why are teams allowed to do this? Do we not have any roster rules? I don't know. I guess not, but seems ridiculous to me. What do y'all think?
Okay. Thank you, Nick from Bama. I think I'm torn on this, Mossy, and I am as people that have listened or watched, you know that I'm a capitalist, and I believe that MLS has a responsibility to MLS and to MLS alone, and to do the things on and off the field that are able to grow the business. I will say this to you, Danny, Nick from Bama. I will say this to you. Earlier in the pod, Mossy, we were talking about this juggernaut and this wealth of talent that a team like England has. Now, this is happening at a time where there have been fewer and fewer England-eligible players and English players playing in what is not arguably, it is the most popular league in the world, in the EPL. So just because you don't have a lot of players from the country that the league is from playing doesn't preclude you from having a good national team. However, I do think that it is a little apples and oranges when it comes to what America is and what America wants to be when it comes to soccer. The reason that I said Danny is because I wanted to mention Danny McLaughlin over there at Run Repeat. And this is a study that they did last summer that looked at the minutes played by Americans in Major League Soccer. And the dramatic change, and from a U.S. perspective, a dramatic decrease in minutes from Americans. So over the last decade, there's been a decrease of 29.53%. And over, well, since 1996, when the league started, there's been a decrease of 43.58% since the first season of Major League Soccer. So there are less and less minutes from Americans, if you will, that are playing in Major League Soccer. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the other side of it is I truly believe that the league has become more competitive and there has been more talent that has been brought in. And let's be honest, they've been able to bring in because of the changing of the rules. And this gets back to your question, though, Nick, about what the responsibility is of Major League Soccer to American soccer. And if they become an incredible league, incredibly successful, make a lot of money, and they're popular all around the world globally, but they do it by using all imported talent, is that a good or is that a bad thing? Now, the capitalist in me would argue that, you know what? You give the people what they want. And that's really where the rub is, because there are plenty of people out there that equate foreign talent with quality. And that's just going to change with time. But the reality is that people will buy tickets. People will get more excited when a player is coming in from the outside than when you are developing a player from the inside. And so ultimately, Nick, from Bama over there, I still think that MLS talks about having a responsibility to the American player. And they don't just talk about it, because let's be honest, the pathways and the opportunities that they have created over the years are incredibly beneficial and incredibly positive, and fundamentally have changed the trajectory of young American players here. But, and we, you know, we mentioned the numbers there, it's gotten less and less over the years. While there's more teams and therefore more opportunities, the actual numbers of minutes have decreased. But I still believe in the American player. I still believe that the American player will find those pathways and will find those opportunities and will ultimately, what it comes down to, they will compete. And I also believe that the American soccer market will recognize and value and celebrate talent that is developed in country and talent that is starring for, in this case, their MLS teams. But this could apply to USL too. But ultimately, I don't think necessarily, Nick, that this is a bad thing. There are, finally, I'll say this before I turn it over to you, Mossy, there are rules and regulations in place that do, quote unquote, foster and encourage domestic talent and protect against what you're mentioning, where you can have all players that are coming in from the outside. But let's be honest, all it takes is a green card and you are not counted and you are able to play. And so we will see teams that field entirely players that have come in from the outside and don't have any domestic talent on their rosters and on their starting 11s. And is that a good or a bad thing? Well, for MLS, it might be a good thing. For soccer in the United States, it might not be a good thing. And I guess that's that bigger question of how much responsibility do you think MLS has to the future of American soccer?
Well, first off, feel better, Nick. He's under the weather, as he let us know. You know, there's speculation on our control room as to whether that's Nick Saban from Alabama, the legendary coach who just retired.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if he listens and participates in coming in.
I mean, Nick Saban, what a great career. So many memorable moments. My favorite Nick Saban memory is when he lost the Rose Bowl to Michigan this past season. As to this question, the premise is correct. I've talked about this. I even asked Taylor Twellman a question about it when we had him on last year. It seems like the transfer strategy for MLS is it's a selling league when it comes to Americans, a buying league when it comes to foreigners. Mm-hmm. Now, it should be noted, Mexico have made a concerted effort to try to keep Mexican players in Liga MX, and a lot of people think it's been to the detriment of their national team. So you do want to strike a balance there. But yeah, it is interesting. The last 10 MLS MVPs have all been foreigners. It would be nice if there were a few more prominent Americans in the league as well. It's all about finding that right balance.
But it also ultimately stems back to the reality of what soccer is and what soccer isn't in the United States. You know, I mean, while we've seen when it comes to hockey and when it comes to basketball, a huge influx and increase in foreign talent and some incredible talent coming in, I don't think that if it was all domestic talent playing in either the NHL or the NBA, I don't think that they would necessarily miss a beat. Now, from a competitive standpoint, they have had to use the world and go out there and scout and bring in talent around the world. And it's resulted in incredible players and incredible teams. But because those sports are of and historically of these countries, when you're talking about the U.S. and Canada, I think it would be different. But soccer, as we know, we are coming to it later than others. And we have all of the other competing sports out there. And so the perception of what we are and the perception of what players outside are, what the sport is outside, is very different relative to those other sports that you mentioned. All right. Anything else, Mossy?
That is it.
All right. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's the end of our show, and I'll give you my one for the road. Okay, welcome back. It's the end of our show, and at the end of each and every show, I give you my one for the road. You know, the industry of jerseys, kits, whatever you want to call them, uniforms out there, it just continues on, and it's like catnip to American soccer fans out there and soccer fans around the world. And the changes are well documented, and the intrigue and the drama and trying to get a hold of what teams, whether it's national teams or club teams, are going to look like as a sport in and of itself. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about what the potential is here. So the folks over there at Footy Headlines have evidently, they have a scoop over there. They have figured out what the 2024 home and away uniforms for the U.S. men's national team are going to be. For those that are watching, you can see them up here in our screen. Okay. I mean, if this ends up being it, I am, you know, there's a time where I like simple and clean, but it also has to pop. And while the white version, I guess the home version it would be, is simple and clean, it just doesn't pop in the way that I wanted. There is a classic look to it, but it's not classic enough. And then you have, I guess, maybe a return to the bomb pop era when it comes to the blue one. I guess we'll call it that. The problem with this one is that, yes, it's plain, but it's not very exciting. And the excitement is supposed to be generated by the bomb pop. But the bomb pop is down low. And the potential for it to get obscured just by where it is, or you're tucking in your shirt, all that, that concerns me. But again, until you actually see it on the field, you don't know if it's going to work. But there is a whole industry out there of people who think that they can do the job better than Nike or Adidas or any of these huge apparel companies out there. And in this day and age of AI and the constant discussion and the concern as to what AI is going to be, what it isn't going to be, how it can be used for good purposes and bad purposes out there, it does give us an opportunity to do some different things. So what ended up happening is people have their own versions and their own designs. And I'll tell you what, there are some incredibly creative people out there. Now, they don't always have, nor should they, all of the information at their disposal. And so while it's easy to say they should do something like this or this is good, the practical ability to do it might be limited. Anyway, U.S. Men's National Team versus Haters, USMNT versus Haters, used AI to generate this jersey for the U.S. Men's National Team. And they asked everybody out there, including me, what we thought. I love this. I love this jersey for a couple of different reasons. One, it pops. It is unique. And two, it is uniquely American. And I've talked about this over the last couple of years, and maybe just the times that we live in have made it much more front and center. But I love teams, and in this case, we're talking about the U.S. soccer team, that lean into, for lack of a better word, the Americanness. And can it be looked at as over the top and braggadocious and, dare I say, arrogant? Yeah, but I love that. And that's what I want. It can't be too American for me. And again, maybe it's the era in which we live in where, you know, let's be honest, the flag and red, white, and blue and stars and stripes, at times it's been weaponized and villainized out there. And I want to, I guess, take it back. I want to capture it. And I want to use it for, in this case, what is good. And going forward, you know, we've talked about the denim over the years and how that has resonated. Going forward, I want something that lives up to that denim. I want something that is comparable and maybe a little bit of an homage to what 94 was. And I think that our country, I think the time demands it. And I think that it would be incredibly successful. And when I say successful, not only resonate, but even from a practical perspective, sell a lot. I think America and Americans are thirsty for America in all different types of representations out there. I think that we have become exhausted of fighting our Americanness, if you will. And in the same way that we have talked about the U.S. women's national team winning back supporters, this, it can be done in a bunch of different ways. And the aesthetic going forward of our U.S. men's national team, obviously leading up to 2026, our U.S. women's national team with all they are doing, even that can help unite. And in a time and in a country where we are so divided, we know sports is often used to unite and teams can unite. And the way that you look, you want people to grab a hold of it and you want people to be proud of it. And you want something that screams, you know what? This is not just America, but this is an America that I am proud of, even with all of the problems that we have. Certainly, I'll be the first to admit we are less than perfect, but it is still a country. And in a sports perspective, these teams go on the field representing our country. All of our differences, all of our disagreements, and yes, all of our flaws out there. And the more that it screams America, I think the better off it is. So if these end up being the jerseys, fine. But I don't think it's leaning into America enough. And I will say this to finish off. If it's not leaning into America because you're scared to do it, then that angers me and that saddens me that that is what has happened to our country, where whether it's an apparel company or anybody else, they're scared to be more America. They're scared to be more red, white, and blue. They're scared to be more stars and stripes. Anyway, Mossy, that's my one for the road. Anything before we go?
That is it.
Nothing? You got nothing?
No, I mean, I prefer the understated look with kids. So some of the ones you showed to me were a little too busy, a little too much going on there. Dare I say a little too American.
Wow. Wow. We could go on for hours. I don't think you can be too American, my friend. All right, listen, thank you. Thank you, Moss. You're wonderful, by the way. Thank you, everybody, for reviewing and downloading and subscribing. I know we went a little bit long today, but like we said, we came in and we were just full of all different things that we wanted to talk about. We didn't even get to all of the stuff that we talked about, but we appreciate you hanging out if you hung out to the end. And if you didn't, you know, you should, because there's some good stuff that happens all the way through. Keep reviewing, downloading, subscribing, rating, doing all the different things that you do, whether you're listening or whether you're watching out there or whether you're listening and watching at the same time, whether you're listening at regular speed, whether you're listening at double speed. It doesn't really matter. We love the fact that you are along for the ride when it comes to the State of the Union. We'll talk to you again later on this week. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the day.